Chuck Grassley, the longtime senator from Iowa, issued another letter this week that I'm going to share with you. And it's a little bit of a lengthy letter, but I'm going to read it to you because there's so much information here about government corruption, specifically the corruption of the Justice Department and the FBI and the protection racket for Joe Biden that helped him secure the presidency illicitly, it looks like, through the interference by the Justice Department and the FBI. So I'm going to share it with you. It's a little easier for me to read on my phone. It's dated October 24th, 2023. It was sent to Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, and Director Wray, the FBI Director, Christopher Wray. Dear Attorney General Garland and Director Wray, since July 25th, 2022, I've requested information from the Justice Department and the FBI with respect to legally protected whistleblower disclosures that inform my office of political bias infecting the decision-making process in investigations related to the Biden family. Since that date, the Justice Department and FBI have failed to provide responsive records. This letter is based on years of investigation, including the provision of information, records, and allegations from multiple Justice Department whistleblowers that indicate there is and has been an effort among certain Justice Department and FBI officials to improperly delay and stop full and complete investigative activity into the Biden family, including but not limited to the FD-1023s referencing the Biden family. This alleged political infection breaks faith with the American people and will ruin our governmental institutions should it continue. As just one initial example, I've been made aware that at one point in time, the FBI maintained over 40 confidential human sources that provided criminal information related to Joe Biden, James Biden, and Hunter Biden. An essential question that must be answered is this: that the FBI investigate the information or shut it down. Indeed, if those sources were improperly shut down, it wouldn't be out of the ordinary for the FBI, as this letter will address. By way of initial background, since August 2019, Senator Johnson and I have investigated the Biden family's foreign financial dealings and business arrangements. On September 23rd, 2020, and November 18th, 2020, this is 3 years ago, we issued reports detailing our findings based in part on hundreds of Treasury Department suspicious activity reports, transcribed interviews, and thousands of pages of Obama-Biden administration government records. Our findings indicated potential criminal activity to include money laundering with respect to members of the Biden family and their business associates, as well as strong financial connections to questionable foreign nationals and foreign government-linked corporate entities. Then in March and April of 2022, we gave three speeches on the Senate floor and made public bank records supporting the same findings and further connecting the Biden family business to businesses linked to the communist Chinese government. After that, on October 26, 2022, Senator Johnson and I provided hundreds of pages of bank records to the U.S. Attorney Weiss, who's the U.S. Attorney in Delaware, now the special counsel, connecting the Biden family to Chinese government-linked entities. Since August of 2019, the Justice Department and FBI have refused to answer our questions, cooperate with our investigations, have made every effort to obstruct and frustrate legitimate and constitutional congressional oversight. On July 25th, 2022, I wrote to both of you. In that letter, I described whistleblower allegations that the FBI developed information in 2020 about Hunter Biden's criminal, financial, and related activity, but ultimately, I lost my start. I describe whistleblower allegations that the FBI developed information in 2020 about Hunter Biden's criminal, financial, and related activity, but ultimately shut it down, the FBI did, based on false assertions that it was subject to foreign disinformation. It's been alleged that the basis for shutting the investigative activity down was an August 2020 assessment created by FBI Supervisory Intelligence Analyst Brian Auten. That assessment was used by an FBI headquarters team to improperly discredit negative Hunter Biden information as disinformation and cause investigative activity to cease. This the precise basis for how the FBI headquarters team selected the specific information for inclusion in Alton's assessment is unknown, but the focus of the FBI headquarters team's attention involved derogatory information about Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. In that same letter, I noted that in October 2020, an avenue of derogatory Hunter Biden reporting was ordered closed at the direction of Assistant Special Agent in Charge Tim Tebow. My office has been made aware that FBI agents responsible for the information that was shut down were interviewed by the FBI headquarters team in furtherance of Alton's assessment. Publicly released portions of Tebow's interview with the House Judiciary Committee confirmed the whistleblower's allegations. The transcript reportedly notes that an FBI headquarters and FBI Baltimore element wanted the Hunter Biden reporting closed, which Tebow followed through on. Now, when I say FBI Baltimore, that's the Delaware operation. U.S. Attorney in Delaware, Weiss, who's now special counsel, part of the Biden regime up in Delaware, he is supported by the Baltimore office of the FBI. On October 13, 2022, I wrote to both of you and U.S. Attorney Weiss with respect to specific records within the possession of the Justice Department and FBI indicating potential criminal activity in the Biden family's foreign business deals. This included the Biden family 1023 that Chairman Comer and I ultimately made public on July 25, 2023. Specifically, I requested an array of records related to that Biden family 1023. That's that IRS, that FBI form that described the Burisma bribe scheme for Hunter and Joe totaling $10 million. While all three recipients of my letter have failed to provide the requested information, none have disputed the allegations I presented to them. Although investigative activity was scuttled by the FBI in 2020, the origins of additional activity relate back to years earlier. For example, in December 2019, the FBI Washington Field Office closed a 205B kleptocracy case, 205B Serial 7, into Mikola Shuvesky, owner of Burisma, which was opened in January 2016 by a Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, FBI squad based out of the FBI's Washington field office. This Foreign Corrupt Practices Act squad included agents from the FBI headquarters. In February 2020, a meeting took place at the FBI Pittsburgh field office with FBI headquarters elements. That meeting involved discussions about investigative matters related to Hunter Biden investigation and related inquiries, which most likely would have included the case against Shilovsky. Then in March 2020, and at the request of the Justice Department, quote, a guardian assessment, unquote, was opened out of the Pittsburgh field office to analyze information provided by Rudy Giuliani. So what happened was, you may recall that Barr, then Attorney General, had kicked all this Hunter Biden stuff up to Pittsburgh. And that Pittsburgh U.S. attorney was trying to evaluate the information he was getting from Rudy Giuliani, things that he was finding out, plus the information the FBI also had. And he got nowhere, by the way. He would find information, send it to the relevant U.S. attorney's offices, and they would bury it. And the FBI was involved in burying as well. During the course of that assessment, Justice Department and FBI officials located an FT-1023 from March 2017 relating to the 2000B kleptocracy investigation of Shuvesky. Kleptocracy. That's the Biden way, isn't it? That FD-1023 included a reference to Hunter Biden being on the board of Burisma, which the handling agent deemed at the time non-relevant information to the ongoing criminal case. And when that FD-1023 was discovered, Justice Department and FBI officials asked the handler for the confidential human source to re-interview the confidential human source. According to reports, that was a fight for a month to get the handler to re-interview the CHS. Eventually, that re-interview took place in the Biden family 1023 about the alleged criminal scheme between then-Vice President Biden, Hunter Biden, and Shuvesky was created in June 2020. A 1023 must be serialized to a case, so that Biden family 1023 was serialized to the Pittsburgh assessment. Again, that's the Barr initiated investigation I told you about. Accordingly, claims that the Biden family 1023 was part of that information provided by Giuliani are incorrect. So the left tried to pretend Giuliani was the one who pushed this bribe scheme allegation to the Justice Department and the FBI, this Burisma bribe scheme that had the, according to this confidential human source, the head of Burisma confessed essentially that he gave $5 million for Joe and $5 million for Hunter to ensure that Burisma was unharassed by anti-corruption act investigators in Ukraine and elsewhere. The information in the Biden family 1023 was obtained separate from Giuliani from a long-standing, highly high-paid FBI confidential human source who's been used in other investigative matters by the FBI, as the Shukhevsky case illustrates. That Biden family 1023 was serialized into the Pittsburgh assessment simply because it was the administrative avenue to house the source information. So the left has spent all this time, and the Democrats on the Hill and the Biden administration have been spending all the time trying to suggest that the information documenting Biden corruption is tainted, tainted by Giuliani or Russia disinformation, whatever you have it. And that's just what Senator Grassley is trying to put onto the record, that this information was coming from all different types of sources, all of which had been vetted, more or less, by the FBI and should have been taken seriously. Due to the fact that there was no case and merely an assessment, now just think about that, no case and merely an assessment. Think of what they did to Donald Trump. They concocted fake allegations against him as it relates to challenging the election and the personal records he had in Mar-a-Lago, and indicted him in an unprecedented fashion and trying to jail him and obviously engage in election interference. They did that in months. Here, you have years-long investigations, and they can't even get out of, quote, the assessment stage. And that isn't what they did for Trump. When he was president, they immediately launched criminal inquiries as soon as they got negative information about him, which in retrospect, and they knew at the time, was shady and didn't warrant a further follow-up. Here they have significant information and they keep on figuring out ways to stall serious criminal investigations of the evidence that they're standing, that was staring them right in the face and frankly that they were burying. Due to the fact there was no case and merely an assessment, as I said, Justice Department and FBI officials were limited in their investigative abilities, including conducting database checks instead of using subpoenas and search warrants. No raids. They're only looking at databases, things that Judicial Watch could probably do. In addition, my office had been informed that the FBI agents and DOJ officials working the Pittsburgh assessment had to pause their work for weeks at a time because the assessment had to be reapproved every 30 days by multiple DOJ and FBI officials. Oh, they were nervous about Biden, all right. They didn't want to do anything. On June 30th, 2020, the Biden family 1023 was serialized into the Pittsburgh assessment, and the FBI leadership would likely have been briefed on it due to the nature of the reporting. Either on that day or shortly thereafter, travel mentioned in the Biden family 1023 was confirmed, as well as some meetings that took place. So this information in the 1023 implicating the President of the United States now, Joe Biden, has been confirmed six ways to Sunday. In August 2020, and possibly earlier, Supervisory Intelligence Analyst Brian Auten opened the aforementioned assessment, which was used by the Foreign Influence Task Force to seek out CHS holdings at FBI field offices across the country relating to the Biden family and falsely discredit them as false foreign information. So just a few months before the election, a top guy in the FBI put out an APB, it's not literally what he did, for all material that would help Joe Biden. That's what he did. What corruption? What corruption? Also in August 2020, the Foreign Influence Task Force improperly briefed me and Senator Johnson with respect to our Biden family investigation after pressure from congressional Democrats. That improper briefing was used by Democrats and partisan media to falsely claim our investigation, which was based on Obama-Biden administrative records, was impacted by foreign disinformation. So that meeting was a setup. They went in there to create the appearance that Grassley and Johnson were barking up the wrong tree and were being misled or active allies of Russia disinformation operations. That's how corrupt the FBI was, and they knew otherwise. They knew they were onto something, so they set up this fake meeting to give their friends like Adam Schiff an excuse to attack Grassley and Schiff and Johnson with leaks suggesting that the FBI warned them of Russia disinformation as it relates to the Hunter Biden, Joe Biden criminal allegations. So it was obstruction of Congress, too. That's what's going on here. On September 3rd, 2020, the Pittsburgh assessment was closed after a mere 6 months. And on September 14th, 2020, the Foreign Influence Task Force communicated with the handling agent for the Biden family 1023. According to information provided by my office, the Foreign Influence Task Force attempted to shut down that reporting by falsely saying it was subject, again, to foreign disinformation. It should be emphasized that the basis for trying to shut down the Biden family 1023, again, this is the $10 million bribe that Burisma's chief talked about to a credible source that the FBI had been using for years. It should be emphasized that the basis for trying to shut down the Biden family 1023 has been described by my office as highly suspect and is contradicted by other documents my office has been told exist within the Foreign Influence Task Force, FBI Seattle Field Office, FBI Baltimore Field Office, and FBI Headquarters Holdings. On September 21st, 2020, after closure of the Pittsburgh assessment, U.S. Attorney Scott Brady transmitted a report to Principal Associate Deputy Attorney General Rich Donahue, summarizing the findings of the FBI assessment. The subject line of that report stated, "Vetting." According to information provided to my office, the officials involved in the assessment had limited ability to verify all the information in the Biden family 1023 because the Justice Department did not authorize them to use a grand jury, and therefore they didn't have all the tools at their disposal to run the information to ground, including subpoenas to obtain documents and interviews. However, the report included a recommendation that additional investigative activity be done. This is just a few months before the election. Imagine if we knew this before the election in 2020. Notably, my office has been informed that with respect to the confidential human source in the Biden family 1023, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Western District of Pennsylvania coordinated with the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Eastern District of New York in 2020 and found no hits to known sources of Russia disinformation. The report, including information on the Biden family 1023, was ultimately transmitted to U.S. Attorney Weiss, who, was, according to Attorney General Garland, had every investigative tool at his disposal even before being designated as a special counsel. So Weiss has had all this for years. Just before the election, they all knew that the Burisma issues, the scandals as it was disclosed in the Hunter Biden laptop, and specifically, they had details with this confidential human source that they've been seriously implicated in a bribery scheme. All that was known by the FBI prior to the election, and rather than following it up adequately, they tried to bury it, punish the senators who were onto it, and then censor you, dear Americans, by getting Twitter and company to shut down reporting on the related Hunter Biden laptop. Since making the Biden family 1023 public On July 25, 2023, it's been made clear by former Attorney General Barr, Director Wray, and Deputy Director Abate that the 1023 is part of an ongoing investigative matter, indicating its investigative credibility and authenticity. As such, it's essential that we examine the alleged attempts by FBI personnel to sweep it under the rug, as well as what steps U.S. Attorney Weiss has taken to use the document for his ongoing investigation. On October 5, 2020, Supervisory FBI Special Agent Eric Miller and Assistant Special Agent in Charge Thibault participated in a call with the Washington Field Office, Baltimore Field Office, Wilmington, Delaware FBI agents, and FBI management personnel. That call allegedly included Assistant Special Agent in Charge Alfred Watson, Supervisory Special Agent Joe Gordon, Special Agent Susan Repke, and Special Agent Joshua Wilson. Notably, FBI agents from the Baltimore Field Office were attached to U.S. Attorney Weiss's investigation, as I described earlier. My office has been informed that on that call, it was confirmed the Delaware case currently run by U.S. Attorney Weiss was opened as a money laundering and Foreign Agents Registration Act case, not a bribery case, as the Biden family 1023 would appear to require, and that it was jointly worked with the IRS. On that call, it was made clear that Delaware FBI agents were in possession of email evidence that contradicted denials made by Joe Biden that he was never aware or involved in Hunter Biden's business arrangements. Again, they all knew Joe was a crook a month before the election. They all knew. And anyone who said otherwise, they said was a liar and a Russian agent, including Trump. On October 23rd, 2020, again, just before the election, Tony Bobulinski met with and was interviewed by James Dawson, a Washington Field Office Special Agent in Charge, Acting Assistant Special Agent in Charge Giulio Arsini, Special Agent William Novak, and Special Agent Garrett Churchill. Bobulinski first provided firsthand knowledge as an eye and ear witness to Joe Biden's involvement in potentially criminal schemes with Hunter Biden. Notably, on October 13, 2022, I wrote a letter to both you and U.S. Attorney Weiss with respect to a summary of Bobulinski's FBI interview that my staff reviewed, and which included, in part, reference to the Biden family, to the Bidens receiving an unsecured $5 million loan intended to be forgivable from CEFC, which is the Chinese energy company, communist, in 2017, that would serve as a payment for actions Joe Biden took during his vice presidency. Evidence of a bribe from the Chinese communists. My gosh. This financial strategy to illegally treat income as a loan is consistent with IRS whistleblower testimony that indicated Hunter Biden attempted the same with respect to other income, including payments received from Burisma. Also on October 23, 2020, Justice Department FBI special agents from the Pittsburgh Field Office brief Assistant U.S. Attorney Leslie Wolf, one of U.S. Attorney Weiss's top prosecutors, and FBI special agents from the Baltimore Field Office with respect to the contents of the Biden family 1023. However, the meeting did not include any IRS agents, and the AUSA Wolf prevented investigators from seeking information about Joe Biden's involvement and Hunter Biden's criminal arrangements. So they were protecting actively Joe Biden. Based on the information provided to my office over a period of years by multiple credible whistleblowers, there appears to be an effort within the Justice Department and FBI to shut down investigative activity related to the Biden family. Such decisions point to significant political bias infecting the decision-making of not only the Attorney General and FBI Director, but also line agents and prosecutors. Our republic cannot survive such a political infection, and you have an obligation to this country to clear the air. Accordingly, based on the aforementioned information, I've obtained the names of 25 DOJ and FBI personnel to interview at a future date, some of whom have named above, who either had or a direct or indirect role in the allegations described above. In addition, please provide the requested information no later than November 17, 2023. This is the requested information. All records between and among the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Western District of Pennsylvania and the U.S. Attorney's Office for Eastern District of New York relating to Hunter Biden, James Biden, Joe Biden, the Biden family, an unredacted copy of the September 2020 report transmitted to the Justice Department officials, to Richard Donahue, who was Deputy Attorney General, all records including, and there's a number of records, from January 1st, 2014, goes back to 2014, this investigation, to the date of this letter that referenced Shavlosky, the Burisma guy, Hunter Biden, James Biden, Joe Biden. Was Tony Bobulinski's interview summary placed within the Guardian file? Was it placed within an investigative case file, or was it buried, right? That's the question he has. All records related to the May 2nd, 2017 and May 3rd, 2017 meetings between Tony Bobulinski and Joe Biden. Bobulinski met with Joe Biden. The case file for the Auten assessment, which is the big assessment of the case that was buried or designed to bury it. All records derived from reporting on derogatory information linked to Hunter Biden, James Biden, Joe Biden, and their foreign business relationships that was overseen under the approval, guidance, and purview of Assistant Special Agent in Charge Thibault from January 1st, 2020 to his last day at the FBI. All opened and closed cases initiated by the Washington Field Office under the purview of Thibault that were ordered closed by him and or denied for opening by the Justice Department's Public Integrity Section and or the United States Attorney's Offices in the District of Columbia and the Eastern District of Virginia. So by my count, there are the Eastern District of Virginia, Eastern District of New York, D.C., Seattle, Pittsburgh, and Delaware. Seven U.S. Attorney's Offices. I tell you, it looks like the Justice Department did nothing else in the last 2 years of the Trump administration and the FBI other than cover up for Joe Biden. Now I just lost my place. Maybe I can see it here in the letter. All records between and among the Foreign Influence Task Force, FBI Seattle Field Office, the Baltimore Field Office, and FBI headquarters using the terms Russian disinformation or foreign disinformation from January 2019 to the date of this letter. From September 2020 to December 2020, so 3 months or 4 months, all records between and among the FBI Baltimore Field Office, the DC Field Office, and Delaware FBI agents regarding the Hunter Biden matter, including but not limited to Assistant Special Agent in Charge Alfred Watson, Supervisory Special Agent Gordon, Special Agent Ropke, and Special Agent Wilson. All records from January 1st, 2020 to the date of this letter between and among the FBI's Foreign Influence Task Force regarding the liquidation of human source reporting relating to Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, the Biden family 1023, and all references to Biden. All records from January 2, 2019 to the date of this letter between and among the FBI Field Office, the Baltimore Field Office, the FBI Seattle Field Office, Delaware FBI agents, and FBI management personnel related to the Hunter Biden matter. All records between and among Washington Field Office Special Agent in Charge James Dawson, the Acting Assistant Special Agent in Charge Julio Arsini, William Novak, and Garrett Churchill relating to Tony Bobulinski, so that's the Bobulinski crew, and all records between Special Agent, Supervisory Special Agent Miller, Assistant Special Agent in Charge Thibault regarding confidential human sources, source reporting on all Hunter Biden related matters. And Senator Grassley closes out his letter with the following truism. Transparency brings accountability. Now, that letter took a lot longer to read than I anticipated. My guys in the back are probably having a heart attack that I went on so long. But I don't know about you, but I think it was worth doing. Because this is the record of FBI and Justice Department corruption that should, in my view, result in massive decimation, defunding, reform, maybe even the ending of certain agencies. These people, as Biden said, he's got 25 that he's listed he'd like to talk to. The House should bring them in immediately. We can't, as I keep on saying, we can't wait. to the degree these individuals are still in government, our law enforcement, our rule of law is threatened. This is the same crew that's protecting, that has been protecting Biden, has been harassing Trump. And I don't know about you, but you read this, and I encourage you to kind of go and get the letter if you want to. If you didn't listen to me read it, I think I did a pretty good job reading it, given its length. I mean, this is urgent. We have a president that looks like, by all accounts, is on a take. The FBI has known it for years. The Justice Department has known it for years. They've tried to destroy those who've tried to expose it. Though Judicial Watch has much in the way of litigation on these on this information in here, so we're doing our own independent investigation of this. Kudos to Charles Grassley and Senator Ron Johnson and the leaders in the House who are pursuing this as well, but we got to move faster. Now, you know, Chuck Grassley is in the minority in the Senate, so these requests, it's like shouting into the wind for him. They don't have much incentive to respond to a minority in the senator, a minority representative in the Senate, the Biden administration. They don't care. They're not going to respond to him. As he's suggesting, they're ignoring his information. But in the meantime, he's gathering the information that certainly the House, I hope, would follow up on, and certainly Judicial Watch already has followed up on, and we've been separately pursuing. You know, we've sued for the 1023 information. We've sued for the scheme to obstruct Congress. At least we're doing the heavy lifting, but we want Congress to do it as well. So it's important that you understand this letter and the crisis evidenced in it for our nation. Because right now we have a president of the United States who's been compromised by the Russians, the Chinese, and who knows who else. And if you don't think the Russians and the Chinese and who knows who else don't know that, then you're terribly naive. And if you don't think that his corruption and his being compromised factors into the decision-making by the Russians and the Chinese and other bad actors such as Hamas, then I don't know what to tell you. But it places the country at risk as long as this corruption is unaddressed and we whistle past a graveyard. And that's why Judicial Watch is so adamant about it, and that's why I took the time to read and share this information with you about the worst government corruption that I'm aware of, ever. I know there's always something worse, perhaps, but this is pretty darn bad, don't you agree? First up, obviously, is the atrocities committed by the terrorist operation Hamas against Israeli innocents last week. And it has resulted in a war. Israel is going to, by all accounts, invade the Gaza Strip, where Hamas is, where the base for Hamas is. And of course, the left, which hates Israel, the extremist left, which supports the revolutionary concepts behind Hamas, which saw atrocities really never seen before, at least since ISIS and the worst of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, where they invaded Israel and murdered women and children, kidnapped civilians, and took them back to Gaza. And to see the left respond with contortions of morality that which should be an embarrassment to any civilized person, have difficulties in calling Hamas out for these atrocities, instead suggesting Israel is to blame, immediately calling for ceasefires and suggesting Israel is engaging in international war crimes by defending itself in Gaza. It exposes also here in the United States, you have many Americans and foreign nationals who are residing here who support terrorism. And I've talked about this radical extreme leftism that supports this revolutionary concept. And it isn't just meaning, excuse me, and it just doesn't mean that they support, you know, a communist revolution. They support revolutions of all flavors, including their fellow travelers in this Hamas revolutionary terrorist movement. And so when it comes right down to it, they support terrorism. And that's what we're seeing here. And I hope for those, I know many people who watch this, the veil has long been lifted. But that the veil has been lifted on what the true aims of the revolutionary left are, what the extremist left really want. So when they talk about decolonization, they mean the homicides we saw in Israel, the efforts to just destroy and murder Israelis on their land and expel them from their land. I mean, that's what's happening when they mean decolonization. And when they talk about decolonization in the United States, what do you think that means? And there's been this red-green alliance, I've called it, the red being the communists and the green being the radical Islamic revolutionaries. It's been going on for years, and there's a Hamas caucus in Congress. Congressman Ilhan Omar, people like Congressman Tlaib support, for instance, and have raised money for the Council on Arab-Islamic Relations, which was founded as a front for Hamas. It's a Hamas front organization. And you see entities out there, well-connected left-wing organizations, well-funded by the likes of Soros and others, who are calling for a revolution. And this is what they consider to be revolution, that those atrocities where babies are killed, women are raped, and civilians are kidnapped and used as shields for when Israel has to, by all accounts, go into Gaza and, you know, remove the Hamas operation from that place. So this is the situation we're in, and it's not obviously just an issue for Israel, it's an issue for the United States, because I forget, what's the latest numbers on the number of Americans who were killed as a result of that terrorist attack? 22? I think that's the latest. Maybe it's up to 25 now. An unknown number have been kidnapped and are missing. And when you think of what Israel's going through, I mean, comparatively speaking, in terms of population, it'd be like if the United States had lost 40,000 people on 9/11 instead of nearly 3,000. And we had thousands of people kidnapped by the terrorists. I mean, that's what happened in Israel. And so let me provide a fact check. What Israel is doing in terms of a response in Gaza perfectly complies with any notion of the rules of war. In fact, Israel's going above and beyond what's required under the rules of war to ensure that civilians aren't unnecessarily targeted. There's no evidence Israel seeks to target innocent civilians, but they have a right to defend themselves from these genocidal monsters that are running Hamas and make sure that threat is eliminated. So to go in and try to destroy that threat, if it results incidentally and not purposely in civilian casualties, you know, that's terrible, but that's the result of Hamas's evil ways, not a stain on Israel for defending itself. But this is what the left does, right? They excuse, condone, and try to protect their allies that follow no rules. And then they make up rules that constrain the good guys, more or less, from defending themselves. And that's what's happening right now with Israel. Murder civilians. Oh, let's not have Israel overreact. It's a war crime. They can't do anything to defend themselves. And that's a sly way of being pro-Hamas, isn't it? Right? It's a sly way of being pro-Hamas. And of course, you know, the international left has long hated Israel. They see it as a bastion of Western civilization. They see it as a proxy for the United States. They hate Israel because it serves as a useful organizing tool for the left because they point to these populations of Palestinians that have been kept in poverty and in refugee camps by these revolutionary types, these left-wing governments and the international elites, to use as a cudgel, A, for revolutionary organizing and for targeting Israel. So it's an unholy mix of your sort of standard anti-Semitism and anti-Westernism that is a core element of the communist left. So, you know, I don't think we need to beat around the bush. I mean, there are just too many people in Washington, D.C. who are willing to excuse this type of terrorism. And there are too many people who support this terrorism outright who you now see out there protesting. And believe you me, dear American, they come after you as much as they come after an Israeli. So, you know, I pray for the innocents in Israel. I mean, I can't imagine being in those situations, the horror of what they've seen. But I pray for peace. But I pray for the peace that comes with a victory against that evil entity that is Hamas. I want to talk about also a court hearing we were involved in last week. Judicial Watch represents a former sheriff and a Tennessee firearms group trying to get access to the manifesto of that transgendered murderer who killed six innocents at the Covenant School in Tennessee. I think it was last month now. And infamously, the manifesto, which, you know, I don't know if it's a manifesto per se, but it's records and notes the person made, I think they were found in her car, that haven't been released yet. And there's really no good reason for not releasing them. So they've been stalling and stalling and stalling, and the theory is that they don't want to release it, and there's been hesitancy politically to release this information because the murderer was a transgender extremist, and, you know, that it doesn't hurt, it hurts the narrative that the left is pushing with their transgender extremists all being victims as opposed to perps. And so Judicial Watch, on behalf of our client, sued. Media entities have sued, and frankly, others have sued to come in and intervene. The schools come in and intervened. They're granted intervention. The parents have come in and been granted intervention. And I thought we were going to get some decisions last week, but we didn't. So they've been, the parents are taking the position that a lot of this shouldn't come out. And I don't think they're right. I don't think the law allows them to intervene like that. But we'll see what the court does. But I think we're going to get a decision on June 8th. But the whole point is it's a much more complicated freedom of information or open records case down there in Tennessee than I think anyone anticipated going into it. And it's basic information. And it's unfortunate that it's turned into, you know, the big case it has turned into, which suggests that the records at issue are important for the public interest. And, you know, what is the public interest here? In addition to the kind of how it reflects on the transgender extremist debate, but you have a lot of gun issues related to this. Tennessee, there's been a push for more anti-Second Amendment restrictions in response to the shooting. Well, these records could reflect on whether more or less gun regulations would have been helpful here. Security at the school, we might have some more information on that, whether we need more securities at this, more security officers at all schools. These records may reflect on that. Now, the police are saying that a lot of the records, in addition to manifesto, can't be released because their investigation's ongoing, which is a little bit curious since the shooter is dead. And they, according to the records they filed and affidavits and declarations they filed with the court, well, they said, well, you know, we think she's the only one, but we're not sure. And they might need a year to release all the key information. Well, we don't obviously think that's right. But there were some more writings that they obtained, for instance, from her home that aren't, quote, part of the manifesto that they don't want to turn over at all, at least for another year. And there's some other records, you know, that may or may not be, you know, releasable under the law, but, you know, need to be reviewed by the judge, which is going to review the judge. The judge, to her credit, is going down to the police department, I think on Monday or Tuesday. I think it's Tuesday. I think it's next week. And she's going to look at all the documents directly. So I appreciate that hands-on approach. But we'll see what happens. Now, she has the manifesto, so she already has that, but she doesn't have the full investigative file that we're also asking be released. So it's been quite the fight. And my colleague, our Judicial Watch attorney on the case, is Russ Nobile. He's been down there, dealing with all of this. It's not just a press release or a comment by me on video about, oh, we got to release this manifesto. Where it means to get the manifesto released requires a lot of heavy lifting in court, and it's not easy and it's not pleasant. Because we're dealing with some very emotional issues, obviously, related to the shooting of these children and the other three adults who were murdered. But the law requires these records be released, and the court, I think, was whether she was right to let everyone come in and have a say is one thing, but, you know, if the parents come in and they say they want to participate, it's going to be hard for any court to say no. But we've got to get this manifesto out, and I don't see any lawful reason to withhold it, and I suspect that we ultimately will get the manifesto. But it's going to be because of a lot of hard work and legal legal drudgery. I guess drudgery may not be the right word, but a lot of legal work by our legal team. So even a little FOIA in Tennessee requires significant resources to get the full truth for the American people. So we're proud to be able to do it, and the reason we're able to do it is with your support. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and like our video down below.